plead my case. No obvious. Send me into outer space. And my fingers.
I just sing my own theme song today.
But that ain't gonna help me now.
But that would be more fun to me. I could try. I'm new all along. Come on, let me try it. Come on, John. All right, I am trouble. You better believe it. Leading my glamorous life right, John says to me. How glamorous being on CNN and all these news programs while doing a three-hour show every day. You think it is? It's called no life. It's called no life. Have no life. Race around. And that continues, but I'm okay with it because I have Red Bull. And I'll be on, here we go. I was on CNN, so for the folks who get so mad at me for going on Fox, I thought maybe they'd be a little happier last night at CNN talking about the auto industry and Rick Wagner. We're going to get way into that, of course. Tonight, though, programming note, yes, I will be back on Fox on Bill O'Reilly, the O'Reilly Factor, the Prince of Darkness himself. And I will be back on the O'Reilly Factor show. We're talking about President Obama's trip to the G20 summit tonight. So check that out at 8:20. I'll still be working. Long days these days. All right. So that's all because it's all good. We get the message out. We continue to try and speak truth to power and get on the right track. So don't give me a hard time about it. I still have to play for you some of read for you some of my emails that I got following some of my appearances, just due to the comical nature of them. I haven't had a chance yet to do a little bit I call love letters, but it's coming. 866-991-9927. That's the number to the program today. What's coming up today? Well, Fritz Henderson, the new CEO, the new Rick Wagner, gave a press conference today. Watched that with great anticipation. We will be covering that to see how they are going to deal with the announcement by the Team Obama, the Auto Task Force, and what they're going to do. There were some announcements made in terms of guarantees for people to lose their job. This is just also depressing. We're going to try and not make it so depressing, but I liked him. So we'll get into that press conference and what he had to say a little more on the Obama press conference as well, because we just didn't have a lot of time yesterday. We were just trying to understand what it was that was really being announced. There were so many messages to so many audiences that we had to do a lot of really just thinking about it, thinking about what that whole plan meant. And I think after a day and a half of talking to a lot of insiders, I have a pretty good idea of what the game plan is. So we're going to get back into that. You know, sort of where it is. I do want to talk a little bit about the international community, the G20 summit, what we can expect there. The rest of the world's mad. I mean, it was France. It's France and Germany. Okay, they're off because they're always about themselves. They are very nationalistic. Those cultures are very nationalistic. So the French president Sarkozy is threatening to walk out of the G20. Because there's a big battle over whether the United States caused this global meltdown, and it's causing great unrest all over the world. And I you know, it's something I don't want to ignore. It's not the simple and the stupid, keep it simple and stupid kind of talk radio, if that's what you want. But if you want to know what's going on in the world and what this big debate is over, then I do want to get into that a little bit. But, you know, I really wanted to start with, because I thought about this quite a bit after. Hey, did anyone see the CNN bit last night, by the way? John, did you watch your colleague on CNN, or no, you just didn't even have time to turn it on?
No, and as much as I wanted to, I just didn't. I wanted to get the recap from you. I wanted to get the Skinner perspective.
Yep, right. There's a load.
Big one.
Well, so we did that. So I had it was interesting because I was on with Nolan Finley. He is the editor of the Detroit News. So we have two conservative, or two newspapers. That was a Freudian slip. We have two conservative newspapers in Detroit. We have the Detroit News and the Detroit Free Press. The Free Press was supposed to be the more progressive paper, left-right kind of situation. And as many cities are witnessing right now, either you're losing your papers altogether or you're losing a perspective. Four papers in Michigan have gone down. The Ann Arbor News, which was a solid one. Flint, I think Bay City. Chicago Sun-Times filed for bankruptcy today. Surprising to me. But even the Free Press has not, it's moved rightward there. So it's not essentially, you know, the left-right sort of debate that it once used to be. And it's owned by the same company. Ah, imagine that. So the News Corporation. How ominous is that? It's like something like the News Corporation, which owns Fox and Wall Street Journal and the New York Post. So anyways, my point is this. We were on last night. I'll get that audio. By the way, I have finally figured out how to get these to you. We're going to link them to the website, nancyskinnerlive.com. So if you do miss them, John, in the future, I have a YouTube channel right now. If you go, you can see a lot of my stuff on YouTube. Bulls and Bears is already out there. But we're going to provide a handy-dandy link right from the website. So if you miss it, you can go see it. But I think my YouTube, if you search YouTube for me, there was a channel called Skinner for Congress. It might be called Nancy Skinner right now. Who knows? But I have been putting some of those recent clips back up. And we'll have the one from CNN as well. But the debate was about whether Rick Wagner was a fall guy. I mean, that's where this debate has centered. It's not about the fate of tens of thousands of workers and average, not only just blue collar, white collar people, small business owners, everyone else who will lose their job. It's this guy, Rick Wagner, you know, and whether he's getting a raw deal. So before I get into that, because I just started thinking about that's the media fixation as you watch all the channels and all the political shows. Was it political? Did poor Rick Wagner get unfair treatment compared to Wall Street? And I'm thinking, what about the people who really had no direct management control over the decision making that went on in these auto companies over the last couple of years, or decades, I should say, and knew that this perfect storm would happen. And they had no ability to say, hey, listen, guys, we got to really start investing and investing not just in R&D, but with the goal of like we did with the moon, the goal of finding this advanced technology mix and getting it to economies of scale. We talked a little bit yesterday with someone about Tesla Motors. And I think they have some great technology. This is Elon Musk. He formed PayPal, and he's a billionaire whiz kid, and they essentially string together 14 laptop batteries and make these cars, these roadsters, for $80,000. But the mass production part of that is not there to be able to do that, and that is the trick that's going on here. And there's so many people to me that I know, my friends, my family, not even who aren't in the supplier chain, but their businesses rely on this, and it's not just Michigan. There's Ohio and Indiana and a couple other states, but Michigan, the fact that we have been in a recession for 8 years because these companies have not been taking the right steps, and a lot of what's not being discussed here is that the big three automakers tried to meet with President Bush. Because when I was running for Congress, Vicki, I'm just going to mention this because it is relevant to the situation. I was running for the 2006 election, and this was my issue, that President Bush, the guy I was running a bit, wait till I tell you the story. This is actually really funny. What happened to me on the way to work is a really funny story. But this is it's not a new issue. It's been going on for a long time. And what I ran on, and I actually found one of my old commercials, it's weirdly prescient. And what happened to me on the way to work was even stranger. But all these people had no control. Nobody's worried about them. Nobody's worried about them. It's all, did Rick Wagner get a raw deal? What about the country who's getting a raw deal because of the lack of vision and leadership that was just sort of adopted in the last crucible of panic in that near-death moment of survival? 866-991-9927. That's kind of the question on the table. And I got a funny story for you when we come back on the Nancy Skinner Show. up in a very strange place when after the question is asked, are automakers being treated unfairly? Because I have been pointing out what's gone on Wall Street, but what's happening in Detroit needed to happen. That is the verdict that a lot of people reached years ago, and maybe now it will be sped up. It is the Nancy Skinner Show. I'm Nancy Skinner, 866-991-9927. I've been talking about it for years, actually, but before I get into that, let's get Michael's in Culver City, California. And
Hi, how are you?
A thought on it. Hi, Michael.
I think there's some of that going on about, you know, poor Mr. Wagoneer, whatever his name is, and, you know, certainly more of it on Fox, but I think there is also a fair degree of the questioning of, you know, the companies as a whole. You know, what it does seem, and I really do think the president does need to explain himself at least a little bit on this. It does seem to be a disconnect between how the banks are getting treated. I mean, we all understand that they're very different companies that do different things, but it does look like there is some kind of level of unfair treatment going on. And the other thing I would ask is, I mean, I don't care about Wagner one way or the other, but the guy they replace, if they're going to do a wholesale change, if that's the whole point of this, the guy they're replacing him with, you know, has been a GM for 25 years. So to me, it doesn't really seem, you know, I don't quite see the point of it. Unless he was the only guy that they could find.
Right. Well, he, you know, Fritz Henderson was appointed by Wagner, and he's a finance guy. And I think perhaps that's, you know, that's why they appointed him. Did you get to see him at all at his press conference today?
No, I didn't, actually.
I have some cuts from it. So, you know, why they made that decision, I think that what Obama has said for a long time, even during the campaign, is that we've got to fundamentally reinvent this industry. And so I don't really see disparate treatment. I do in that, you know, I think what they're trying to do with both industries in a bad economic situation is to turn them around. And for the auto industry, the prescription is just different than it is for Wall Street. And, you know, I should be all outraged because I'm in Detroit. But what I'm saying is that, you know, they have not, they're all dabbling in technology. They've spent a lot of research dollars, and in GM in particular with the Chevy Volt, this technology is really very promising and was just about to be put out in mass production Thanksgiving. So to let it go is just insane. I mean, that manufacturing, and I think Obama gets this, that manufacturing in this country we have to have a rejuvenation of
absolutely, especially the auto industry. I agree with that, but it does appear to me to be. I mean, and I hear everything you're saying, and I agree with most of it. But for, you know, from what the president said yesterday and what they seem to be saying, it does appear that they're also wanting, you know, basically the same sort of additional givebacks by the unions. And I mean, I understand that people have to make sacrifices, but geez, you know, I'm in the grocery workers union, but the auto industry union has, I don't know how much more they can give back at this point. Or is Obama just sort of saying that to kind of cover for perhaps the real other reform that he's going to do, which, you know, is what you're talking about in terms of...
I think you're onto something, Michael. I think that he realizes the concessions that they have made, and they might make more as it relates to Viva. I've got an expert on that coming up in the program. But I think mostly this message was directed toward the bondholders, which is ironic because the bondholders have been the ones holding out. This whole viability plan, the deal was that they were given those bridge loans. You go, everyone take a two-third haircut. You know, if you don't come back and do that, you're not getting your second loan. Well, the only ones who really didn't make serious concessions were the bondholders. And guess what? That's Wall Street. That's these companies like Citigroup, all these big companies that, you know, were buying up bonds. And they weren't making those concessions because they felt like they were going to get bought out. And I honestly, now I don't know this, I don't have any inside information, you know, from the administration, but I honestly think that because they were unwilling to act, that the Obama team had to say, listen, we will go into what they call a quick rinse bankruptcy. We will take it. If you don't concede it, we will take it from you and then restructure the industry and move forward.
Okay.
You hear that?
Yeah, so. I do. I mean, I'm just, I'd like to hear more about that whenever anyone has time, because I'm not, I'm not a financial expert. Yeah. I'm not quite sure.
Well, I've only got 20 seconds. I got 20 seconds, but I will continue talking about that and taking your calls, 866-991-9927, about the mixed messages kind of going out and who they were meant to. And much more coming up on the Nancy Skinner Show. Here we go, 866-991-9927. I find myself in the middle of this bizarre thing where everyone's like, poor Rick Wagner. I'm reading a story here on the Nancy Skinner Show. Did I say that yet? 866-991-9927. Small, trivial details. Think who I am and the number to the show. Workers say Obama treated auto workers worse than Wall Street. This is an AP report. Many assembly line workers reacted with skepticism and anger to the tough tactics. And they said one UAW local was quoted as saying, it's the age-old Wall Street versus Main Street smackdown again. Brian Fredline, who is president of UAW Local 602. And it says, in a town where not many of those guys were sympathetic to Rick Wagner, they actually have sympathy for him because he was forced to step down as CEO. He was called a sacrificial lamb, scapegoat, fall guy, because of the treatment of Wall Street executives, the comparative treatment of Wall Street executives. But I got to tell you, folks, you know, well, the AIG guy did have to step down. I mean, remember Ed Liddy? He was a replacement. So there was one there. But I have to tell you that there really was a lack at the top levels of these companies. There was a lack of vision, of foresight to drive these companies in a way that would be long-term sustainable. And I had been talking about this for a long time, that they needed to retool their existing facilities to get fuel-efficient vehicles out on the road for their survival. Not only for the survival of the industry, but also for our national energy security and our national security needs. I'm trying to get up here. Let's see. I can't say. There we go. Let's see. Here is a commercial I came across while I was running for office that this was during, 2005-2006 cycle, getting out there trying to say, hey, John, can you play this cut for me somehow for some reason? There we go. This was my radio spot. This is Bobby Kennedy Jr. doing an ad while I was running in the home of the auto industry on the need for them to be more fuel efficient back in 2005. I've been talking about it for years, but I actually put my money where my mouth was and ran on this issue in the home of the auto industry in 2005. Take a listen.
The scientific debate about global warming is over. The good news is that we have the technology today to avert global warming and all of its disastrous impacts.
My plan specifically is to repeal $6 billion in tax subsidies given by President Bush and Joe Nolenberg to the oil companies and reinvest that in Michigan's auto industry to produce the next generation of fuel-efficient vehicles.
All we need today is leadership, and that's why we need to elect Nancy Skinner to Congress.
I'm Nancy Skinner, and I approve this message.
So here, that was what I ran on in the home of the auto industry. People told me I was crazy to be really taking on the auto industry. Especially talking about global warming. But it wasn't just because of the climate and global warming. It's because they were going to get to the point where they wouldn't have market share if they didn't respond to the realities on the ground in the global competitive environment, and that they were not pushing technology. They're getting fat and happy on SUVs. And it was global warming. That's why Bobby Kennedy Jr. did that ad for me. Now, the funny thing is, So I was running against an incumbent, a 14-year incumbent named Joe Nolenberg, and who was the worst on the environment. And he had been winning by 20-point margins in his previous two elections, so everyone thought I was crazy for challenging him. But I said, someone's got to speak up. I mean, this is ridiculous. This is, you know, we are not moving in the direction we should. And so I challenged him and lost by just over 3 points in the end of this race. And I ran on these issues that I felt were right, no matter what my consultants told me, despite that. But the really bizarre thing, on my way to work today, I see this white, it was a Lincoln, the TMZ, I think it's called, the Link, they're really actually pretty cool looking cars, the new Lincoln, with a Nolenberg sticker in it as I'm driving to the studio. And I'm in my beat up Chrysler Sebring convertible that I do love. And I look, I'm like, who would still have a note? Because Nolenberg, he got beat in the next election. Okay, he did get beat by a Democrat who's in office now. And because my race was close enough that the DCCC targeted the race and put $3 million into the race because I showed that he was vulnerable. And they did, except they backed someone else. Love how that happens, huh? Politics, great. And so Nolenberg's out of office, and I see this Nolenberg sticker as I'm driving to work today with all of this swirling around in my head. I look over, and it is Joe Nolenberg driving this Lincoln. And I'm driving even with him at the speed limit, just like staring at him as to get his attention, of course. And he looked over at me, and I just smiled and waved at Joe Nolenberg. And he waved back, and I sped off. So what are the odds that, you know, here we're doing this, and I actually run into him? He certainly knew who I was, because they went after me and, you know, just called me a liberal talk show host and whatever they could say, use the L word. She's going to raise your taxes to see yourself on these TV commercials all of a sudden. I've never been in public office. I've never raised taxes. But the commercials they came out with were just were stupid. And ineffective because I almost beat the guy and I had no money. I got no money from the party. I got it from listeners to my show. I got it from DFA, Democracy for America people and web people and the party didn't back me and I almost won. So here I am back on the radio. Anyways, enough of my pity party. But here's the thing. Chrysler, of all companies, the Republicans were so supportive of the auto companies and tied at the hip, although the whole delegation has been here in Michigan, I must say. I called Nolan Finley an apologist for the auto companies, but let's face it, although the Democrats, Carl Levin is a towering hero in my book and Debbie Stabenow on so many grounds, they are home team players and they've been supportive of the industry and have not pushed them on CAFE standards or, you know, they've worked on trying to help technology, but they haven't pushed them in a way that I would have pushed for their longer term survival, even if it was uncomfortable in the short term. So Chrysler sends out the top political, their government relations person, an email to the entire company saying support Joe Nolenberg in this election, that he's been a good friend of our company. Now, this caused quite a stir because, you know, these are tens of thousands of employees at the time. I don't know. To send it out over the company system to say who to vote for and specifically not to vote for me was quite a move. And there was some pushback. I got tons of emails from people saying, I resent the fact that my employer would, over my company system, tell me how to vote. And someone, you know, and I never got an apology. Nobody ever came back and said, we're sorry. They never issued another email saying, our bad. They actually told people how to vote. And now the funny thing is that no one's talking about this. Joe Nolenberg kept bragging about how he was good friends with President Bush. And so if you're such good friends, the big three wanted to meet with Bush. All this blame is going back on Obama. President Bush would not meet with the big three automakers. When they finally realized that at the very end that they were in big trouble and they're losing sales and they needed a partnership with the federal government to help them retool their facilities, he would not meet with them. It took something like a year, and then he met with them for about 20 minutes. So for everything to be heaved onto President Obama's door, this is yet another problem that was brewing for decades in terms of leadership of the company. And then even during the Bush administration, he could have rolled up his sleeves and fast-tracked some retooling efforts, and he wouldn't even meet with them, let alone help them. And then the company themselves, when I would have led that effort, shot themselves in the foot by saying, do not vote for her. So how did that work out for you, Chrysler? You know, I do hope. I know lots of people that work there. My ire is not aimed at those employees. That's who I have been fighting for. It is at that some of the top management that didn't have the vision and they didn't have the foresight. So forgive me if I don't feel bad for Rick Wagner and the people at the very, very top that looked only at short-term compensation packages and profit margins at the expense of all these people who are going to now have to take these, going back to the table, lose their pensions, health care, people who are retired. That's who I am concerned about. And so those are the people that I was, you know, everyone's all worried, he's the fall guy. Everyone who works in this industry and in any related industry is the fall guy. Rick Wagner is going to walk away with $20 million. We wish that the people that were just making money, either working for them, the suppliers, or a flower shop in the area, or a restaurant. What about those people? What about those people? Oh, let's go out to Beverly Hills, California, get Alan into the conversation. Hi, Alan.
Hi, how you doing? Two points. One real quickly. We had, I'm 66, and I remember we had an oil situation after Carter took office. And he instituted a national policy to get us free from Middle East oil. We were doing all the things that we're doing now. And I say, if he would have been reelected, and Mondale and Dukakis, instead of these Republicans, Reagan, Bush, and Bush, the situation, I'd put my life savings would be entirely different today. Now, the other point is, my point is this. The Republicans, they seems they're all coming out and they say, let the car industry go bankrupt. Let the financial institutions go bankrupt. Let everybody go bankrupt. Wouldn't that result in a cataclysmic, horrible, horrible depression?
Yes.
In America and the
yes.
world if that happened?
Yes. That's the point.
Then why do they keep saying that?
Well,
are they stupid or what? I don't understand.
Well,
understand.
You know, let's use a kinder word. Uneducated, ignorant about the consequences. But that's essentially and it's not only just here in America, it's the whole global situation. There downward deflationary spirals that when they bust for the long haul. I mean, that is something you can't recover from. It's not like an ordinary business cycle or a recession or where you have a little inflation. You can use monetary policy.
A little bit small,
right.
I see.
And this is... this.
And to hear Senator Sessions, when I hear him, he makes me sick to my stomach. He says, let the car industry go bankrupt. I guess they don't know what to say. No matter what Obama does, they're opposite. We've been talking about it's important we go back to regulation, so the government needs the power. And so then you hear these Congress senators saying we don't want to give them the power.
Right.
So what are they supposed to? What are they supposed to do then?
Alan, I think you just said it yourself when you said it's whatever Obama is for, they're against. And that's pretty much what they've decided to do, regardless of the ultimate outcome on the, you know, on the economy and on their constituents here and citizens and everybody. It's just the party of no. But when you're dealing with something as severe as this, you know, they should be completely irrelevant. Don't even listen. It's just completely irrelevant because we're in ER right now. Our economy is on the brink of complete meltdown. It really is. And so Team Obama, I don't blame them at all for getting in there and enforcing a stronger fundamental restructure of the auto industry. I wrote an op-ed suggesting they do it in November. That's what they need to do so that it survives the long haul. And the same thing with the banks and Wall Street. that now they need new power to regulate non-bank institutions. Yep, they're going to need to do the same thing. They're different fixes, but it's the same thing. They've got to go in and fix what hasn't been fixed over decades and decades and decades, and they're doing it in both industries. They're a little different, but they're doing those fixes, and that's what has to happen. And if you just want to say no, then just get out of the way. Boy, I can't wait to go on Bill O'Reilly tonight. He's gonna get a mouthful of me, isn't he? 866-991-9927, the number. To the Nancy Skinner Show.
Community is struck by a natural disaster. The nation responds to put it back on its feet. While the storm that has hit our auto towns is not a tornado or a hurricane, the damage is clear, and we must likewise respond. And that's why today I'm designating a new director of recovery for auto communities and workers to cut through the red tape and ensure that the full resources of our federal government are leveraged to assist the workers, communities, and regions that rely on our auto industry. Edward Montgomery, a former Deputy Labor Secretary, has agreed to serve in this role. And together with Labor Secretary Solis and my auto task force, Ed will help provide support to auto workers and their families and open up opportunity to manufacturing communities in Michigan and Ohio and Indiana and every other state that relies on the auto industry. They will have a strong advocate in Ed.
In Ed is what he said. Ed Montgomery is the guy that President Obama yesterday talking about Detroit as if we were New Orleans. Essentially, we know that the hurricane is coming. We've been underwater for a while, and a hurricane's coming. It's the Nancy Skinner Show. I'm Nancy Skinner. 866-991-9927. I guess we're kind of wrapping up this discussion about poor, poor, pitiful Rick Wagner. He's the fall guy, poor him, all the differences between Wall Street, the disparate treatment with Wall Street and Detroit. I don't want to place that blame all on the Obama administration. I think that their ultimate goal is a good one. The goal is to salvage what can be salvaged. They don't want to throw good money after bad. And I'll tell you, folks, the polls don't help. Do you know what the polls are? The numbers in terms of auto bailouts? The Wall Street executives are getting more favorable polling numbers than the autos. So it's 70 to 30. That's the polling numbers. You look at those numbers as a politician. Only 30% of the public felt like there should be any extension to the auto and to the auto companies. Can you believe that? 70% said no. Now, I don't know if those numbers have changed any with the with Wall Street, but it's certainly for him, for the president to step out, given those numbers, and say we are going to help with at least 30 days for Chrysler, 60 days for GM, and say we're really going to dig in behind the scenes and try and help you clean out your balance sheet. And if we have to go into something that is a clean rinse, I'm going to play some sound from Fritz Henderson's press conference this morning. But essentially get the bondholders to step up to that's Wall Street. That's the bondholders. Those are the guys who haven't stepped up to the plate. And then help the industry try and figure out how to incentivize the sales of the vehicles so that we have these cars. Ford Fusion, they get 41 miles per gallon right now. The cars have come a long way, folks. I think there needs to be a messaging campaign that comes out of Detroit that speaks to people on a different level, not just like, here's a deal, 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 deal. You know, that goes right over people's heads. It's got to be, look it, we have come a long way. But the fact remains, I don't feel sorry for Rick Wagner. I feel sorry for the people who are just everyday people who live here. Because you can see it in their faces. 8 years of recession. one in 10 workers unemployed. Housing values, everyone on the phone when I'm talking to people, like, hey, I guess you can get off cheap. Yeah. It's like Katrina. It really is. It feels that way in a lot of ways, in a lot of stress and a lot of anxiety. Dr. Phil is coming to town next week to do a free, like, psych conference for us. Jay Leno's coming to cheer us up. I mean, honestly, both these things are happening because we're, you know, the worst. We're screwed, I guess. And Obama at least has thrown us a little lifeline. So we'll take it. We'll take that lifeline and we'll work with it. All right, 866-991-9927. More coming up on The Nancy Skinner Show. We're all going through all this together. At least we have each other. This is the Nancy Skinner Show. There's something to that, you know, being all in this boat together, except if you're in Detroit. We're taking on more end of, we're in like, if it's the Titanic, we're in the third level down, you know, where, where they went first, right, and the gates were kind of locked. That's what it's feeling like a little bit here. The gates are locked and we're in the third hole or whatever it was called. 866-991-9927. A lot of talk, continuing fallout from the news yesterday about the Obama plan and the auto plan. You know, let's just go ahead. We found somebody has sent us a CNN clip last night. I was on debating this issue with someone I called him an apologist for the auto industry. You know what? That's risky to do here, but like I ran for Congress on that, and I'm sorry. And I think that the president has always done this. He's always stood up on principle. Iraq war and other areas, what they're doing with Wall Street, with the idea that they want additional regulatory powers for non-banks. They're doing what's right even when it's tough. And so let's go ahead and play a little bit of my piece last night. And you can go ahead and tell me if I was too soft or too hard or what you think. This is on Campbell Brown Show, and it's Roland Martin who's
right
filling
now,
in.
Right now, we turn to the Motor City, where a couple of prominent media voices have opposing views on Rick Wagner. With me now is Nolan Finley, editorial page editor for the Detroit News, and Nancy Skinner, whose nationally syndicated radio show originates from Detroit. She also ran against Barack Obama in the 2004 U.S. Senate primary in Illinois. Now, Nolan and Nancy, here's what the president had to say about GM's now former CEO.
After broad consultation with a range of industry experts and financial advisors, I'm absolutely confident that GM can rise again, providing that it undergoes a fundamental restructuring. As an initial step, GM is announcing today that Rick Wagner is stepping aside as chairman and CEO. This is not meant as a condemnation of Mr. Wagner, who's devoted his life to this company and has had a distinguished career. Rather, it's a recognition that we'll take new vision and new direction to create the GM of the future.
So, Noah, what's going on here? Is Rick Wagner the fall guy?
Well, of course he's the fall guy. And the issue, Roland, really isn't whether Rick Wagner deserved to go or didn't deserve to go. General Motors is still a private company. It is owned by shareholders. Those shareholders elected a board of directors. That board has the oversight and fiduciary responsibility to fire and hire executives. And this is an extraordinary reach by the president into a private company to remove the head of the organization. And it stands in stark contrast to the way he's treated the banks. The banks have received 35, 40 times more money mm-hmm. than these auto companies have asked for, and they've gotten it with no questions asked, no rules.
Nancy, what about that? I mean, is it a smart move by the president to force Wagner out, or is it a bad decision on their part to really go this deep into private business?
Well, that's the thing about tough love, you know. The bad news is tough. The good news is the word love is in there. The president said fundamentally restructure this industry so it survives. And that's what he intends to do. And Rick Wagner's not going to be the guy to do it. So what? So be it. You know what? There's a lot of apologists like Nolan in Detroit who for a long time have not really called them on the carpet on this. The good news is this. Is that President Obama realizes that the technology is in the pipeline with GM, with Ford, not so much with Chrysler. They didn't have the great green advanced technology, but these other companies do. And he realizes that, and he's going to get his team and the resources of the government to mine that, restructure the whole industry. And it's beyond even the technology for the automotive, Roland. We're talking the technology that comes out of Michigan is in multiple industries. The president understands the stakes. He's not walking away from this industry. If Rick Wagner has to go and we have to find new players to do this, so be it. We will move on and so will this country.
Now, Nola, you heard all of that and you heard Nancy talk about the technology. Mm-hmm. First of all, she also called you an apologist for the big three. But look,
that's kind of
but look, even the White House, they've come out and said that, look, all the technology thus far, it's not going to make a difference in terms of the boat because it's going to cost too much money. And so what about that? If they're even saying that, well, then what's left to really save?
Well, I mean, that assumes that this administration and this auto task force knows more about making cars and knows more about automotive technology than the big three do. It's interesting to note, it should be noted, that of the 22 auto panelists and their top staff, only three drive American vehicles. They almost all live on the coast. They don't know, they don't have a clue what's going on in Detroit's research and development operations. These companies spend more than $12 billion a year on research and development, and they're constantly being jerked around by the government. First it's ethanol, then it's hydrogen, now it's electric. All that money going into research, and the government can't make up its mind which technology it's going to support, and we expect it to do a better job of running these companies.
Nancy, about 30 seconds. Look, GM had the car of the year. They have all kind of accolades left and right. Buick tied first place in terms of quality. So they're making great cars. They're making quality cars. The president alluded to that. Well, then, if they're already doing that, what's left to do? Who's going to buy the cars now? What's going on?
You got to incentivize it, just like the credit markets. You got to make it leaner, greener, meaner, and then have incentives for people to buy American cars. You got to get that going again, and we will survive this and be the comeback story of this entire global meltdown. I assure you of that, Roland.
Nolan Nancy, we appreciate it. By the way, Rick Wagner's going to pick up $20 million as well, so he's not going away.
He's okay. Okay, he's okay. Yes, I called him an apologist because there are a lot of apologists in this town. Trust me on that. 866-991-9927. Nolan Finley said that the private companies, how can the government know, how can they make better decisions than the companies, than the private companies themselves? Well, in fact, the findings of the auto task force suggested, here's Fritz Henderson, who's the new CEO now, saying that here were the four key findings of the auto task force, and I think he sounded like he stood in agreement that perhaps, in fact, the government had some good suggestions and would be a good partner to help them restructure.
If you combine marketplace with financial viability, it's about making sure that all of our product lines, all of our product range, historically, we've relied too heavily on profitability from pickup trucks and SUVs, for example.
See?
The view is everything's got to pay rent in our product portfolio. Every one of our entries needs to be focused on not only a position in the marketplace with the customer, but it needs to be profitable. And moreover, the need for profitability is absolutely of paramount importance because we need to fund the development of advanced technologies so as we get to the next generation of the technologies, whether it's the Chevrolet Volt, whether it's our hybrid offerings, whether it's the work we're doing, for example, continued work we're doing on second generation biofuels and ethanol, that requires money, that requires investment, and so therefore the company must have a level of profitability and cash flow in order to be able to fund those and basically reinvent our product portfolio in the future. Those are the four key points they made in their findings.
That's Fritz Henderson, the new CEO of GM. Did you hear what he said, folks, today? He said, we have relied too much on the sales of SUV and trucks in the past, and what we need to do is we need to be able to sell these vehicles so that we can fund the next generation, the next advanced technology generation. We have the Volt. We have stuff in the pipeline, but we want to go further and faster. And he said those were the key findings of the task force, and he agreed with them. So, you know, I hear this whole, you know, going back, listening to my little love Peach Rush Limbaugh on the way in, outraged that the government is going to step in and fire Rick Wagner and tell the auto companies how to build cars. They don't know how to build cars. Well, apparently, the auto companies were too short-sighted in terms of their profit. That's the issue here, is it not? 866-991-9927, that they saw the profit margins with SUV and trucks. And I am sure that they knew that there would be a wall. We would hit a wall. They saw the growing Toyota picking up huge sales because they moved out ahead of everybody in fuel-efficient vehicles and the Germans as well. But yet they didn't act. So maybe the government, if we had more of a partnership where the government works with private industry, either they work with them to help, like they do in Germany, much, much closer alliances. In terms of like wind turbines, they passed wind policy, so now there's incentives, and you have huge. That is, they are the number one manufacturers of wind turbines. We don't have any of that. It's just like the magical markets work by themselves until they don't, and then they come crawling for help from the government, and then they complain about help from the government. You know, you can have capitalism. I'm for capitalism, but when capitalism fails. When they fail to take into consideration national security objectives, big, broad trends, then those guys, and they want help, then they're going to go. Then the CEO's got to go, and we got to put our heads together and figure out what is in the best interest of the general welfare of this country. Stop with the labels, the socialist, communist, all that chest pounding, and save these industries and make them better and make them bigger and make them grow. And then we will have people that we're not just worried about Rick Wagner. I'm worried about the Tom and the Tim and the Joe and the Frank and the Sally and the Sue who suffered because of the bad decisions of Rick Wagner, frankly. 866-991-9927. The number that Nancy's going to show you, calls her next.
We know that basically by no later than June 1st, if we're not able to accomplish this outside of bankruptcy, we would be in bankruptcy. It's pretty clear the government was unequivocal in that regard. And, you know, frankly, from our perspective, we don't need any more time to be able to try to get this done. I would say, but it doesn't have to take 60 days. If it's quite clear that we're not able to accomplish what we need to do in terms of operational restructuring, reduction of debt in the balance sheet, and what we need to do to accomplish these broad parameters of having a viable business, you know, this will be a management judgment. This is one that we would need to make, obviously, internally. We would want to review it with the president's task force, but if it's just quite clear to us that it can't be done, then we'll move faster. But we have 60 days, and I actually think that if it's going to get done out of court, we can get done in 60 days. Other than that, you know, more time is going to help the process.
Quick, how many times did he say 60 days? I bet 60 days is a number hanging on the wall at GM. 60 days. You have 60 days. It's the Nancy Skinner Show. 866-991-9927. Have you thought about buying a new car in the next 60 days? Because if you have, it's a good time to do it. Both Ford and GM now have announced a payment protection plan to reassure consumers who may be worried about losing their jobs. Up to $700, Ford's is, each month for up to a year if you buy a Ford Lincoln or Mercury. And then you lose your job. And GM's going to make the same offer. Or if you're if you get unemployed by the state, same thing, you're eligible. But you know, if you lose your job, you got like a year of your car being paid. Will that be enough to like get you to go test drive something? The fact that you could go get a car right now, get the best deal you ever have on one of these products you've heard so much about right now, 866-991-9927, and know that there's some safety, you have some time frame when the economy recovers, you might not get this deal at some point. Well, is that enough? Is this payment protection plan, you know, something that's going to perk your ears up and make you take another listen to take a look, kick the tires? That's my question. Marvin is in Culver City, California. Hi, Marvin.
Hi, Nancy. How you doing today?
Very well, thank you.
Well, I just wanted to say I've been driving electric cars for 8 years.
Really?
And we charge them with solar panels in our garage. And
What kind of a car?
You were asking if we would consider buying a new car. I will never buy another car that runs on gasoline.
What kind of electric car do you have?
They're Toyota RAV4 EVs. And before I bought a Toyota, I was a GM man to the bone, and GM would not let me buy the car that I wanted, which was the best car that they ever produced, and then they destroyed. And, you know, so I had to buy a Toyota because they were the only company that allowed me to buy the car that I wanted.
Okay. So if General Motors comes out with the Chevy Volt as the first fully functioning electric vehicle, would you consider buying that?
Yes.
Okay. So you want an electric vehicle, and you've got solar panels on your roof to power the thing.
Right, and once you go electric, you just don't know how nasty gasoline is. I mean, our kid grew up not riding in cars that use gasoline, and he'd go and ride in other people's cars and go, "Why do the cars stink?" You know, because you don't know how bad it stinks because you smell it every day, so you don't smell it.
So did you convert your Toyota? Because I don't think they make an electric vehicle production vehicle.
No. These cars were produced by Toyota Motor Corporation, and Toyota was the only company that sold any of them. GM only leased the EV1s, and all of the other car manufacturers they only leased the cars.
Mm-hmm.
So then when they beat the...
it's just a matter of technology. And when they get there, and if they get there, you'll be in line when your Toyota runs out and buy a great American electric vehicle.
I would love to do that. I would love to do that. And I'm involved in an organization called Plug In America. They're at pluginamerica.org. And we have been working on this issue for about 8 years now. And we pride ourselves in shaming these... because it's really stupid that in this day and age we're still using 19th century technology in our cars.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
At this point our cars should have more in common with an iPod than with, you know,
That's a great, great analogy, Marvin. I used to say that when I was running for office, I would say, listen, every single industry has made generational, evolutionary leaps and bounds except for the auto industry. Don't tell me we can't do better. And, you know, the apologists said we can't do better. All right, your call is coming up. Actually, 866-991-9927 in the Nancy Skinner Show. with the auto bailout. Is there anything else going on in the world? It's the Nancy Skinner Show. I'm Nancy Skinner, 866-991-9927. I mean, it's been quite a slug for me, I'll tell you. You know, dealing with this, trying to figure out what it means for Detroit, for the country, then going on TV every night. Which, oh, by programming note, I am going on Bill O'Reilly tonight. So I need your thoughts and prayers. And suggestions. We're talking about the term war on terror. President Obama has dropped the use of the term war on terror, and that's upset everybody. So, okay, we'll be dealing with that, I think, tonight at 8:20 on the O'Reilly Factor. So it's been quite a bit. What else is going on? Oh, I do want to talk about that a little bit. We have a guest that's supposed to be joining us to tell us how we can all cope, because you know a lot of people are going to have to figure out how to land on their feet, regardless of what happens here with the situation. One of the factors is that if they survive, the auto companies, they're going to shut down lots of plants. They're going to have to consolidate and close plants, and people who are used to a certain way of life are going to have to start all over, even if they survive. If the bondholders or for some reason they don't survive, the entire country is going to have some economic shock. I guarantee you that. I guarantee the markets will be in shock, that the ripple effect will be enormous. There will be layoffs in industries you have no idea, newspaper, radio, all kinds of things because of the auto industry. So, you know, prepare yourselves, folks. It's not just me. It's, you know, go buy a car and then have a backup plan for starting over because you may have to do just that. Laurel Langmire is somebody who can help us figure out how to start all over again because she's been teaching people how to do that for quite a long time. Laurel is a lecturer and author. Her website is liveoutloud.com, and she has quite a unique story that she shares with other people. She started her own business when she was just 17 years old. By the time she was 34, she had a multi-million-dollar business. She has created a whole portfolio of lots of businesses, by the way, and has decided that she would. This would be a good time to kind of share with people how you can start with nothing. You can be a stay-at-home mom. You can be an unemployed auto worker. You could be a radio talk show host on the brink. And you could make more money by focusing, changing your priorities, and focusing on different outcomes, different objectives. Laurel Langmire joins us now. Thanks so much, Laurel.
Hey, thank you. And how are you?
Well, I was just saying, Laurel, that, you know, I'm in Detroit, and we're having a tough time here. We've been in recession for 8 years, and then we got this announcement that we have, like, 30 and 60 days for our companies. And a lot of people here have this sense of, oh, my gosh, an industry we have relied on for 100 years, it might just go away. So there's a sense of fear. A lot of people, I think, just in talking to my friends and neighbors, have almost paralysis going on because.
Oh, I would bet.
Yeah, you're trying to figure out, well, what's next? What if this happens? What's the cascade effect? I mean, people that are involved in the production of commercials for the auto companies and, you know, film offices. Oh, there's so many different aspects to it that there's not a lot of other conversation that's going on around here. So that's why I wanted to bring you on, because I also want to offer some inspiration for folks. You say in your book that the most important thing is that people spend too much time focusing on getting out of debt and not creating new wealth.
Well, and I'm going to say, like, in the situation the folks you're all talking about,
yeah,
just, like, tomorrow, they need, I mean, what are they doing tomorrow to start creating some cash? So, you know, the writing is unfortunately on the wall, and I mean, my personal opinion is that, you know, how would I say it nicely?
Don't be PC. It's my show. You don't have to be PC on
right,
the show.
Well, I think it just sucks then that some of these companies are getting bailouts and something like the car industry isn't, when the bottom line effect is the reason that, you know, your town is the way that it is and the auto industry is the way that it is. They cannot get money. People stop buying cars because they can't get credit. And that's a bank. I mean, we're back to the bank. I mean, the banks have got to release some cash. And credit card companies have got to release credit instead of, you know, restrict it back. Because if people actually had the credit to start buying vehicles again, you know, there's your sales, and I mean, there's a walkout. So I think it's an interesting selection of who they're choosing to help and not.
Yeah, well, we've kind of gone over that ad nauseum here, so I'm bringing you on, Laurel, to talk about how people can, even if that's the reality that we're faced with, you got to deal with the hand you're dealt.
And I think they got to deal, and so whether it's a reality or they, you know, anything gets fixed around it or how it gets fixed. As a person, I always say you don't have fixed potential, so don't live on a fixed income, which means you're not going to run out and quit your job, or maybe in, you know, a few months that's, you know, going to be the reality that you're out of one. But you all are doing something now. You all relied on one industry, so what's going to come next? The innovators are going to be the ones that make the most money. Every recession, every depression got walked out of with really smart thinkers, entrepreneurs who got together and said, let's go make something, you know, let's go make some lemonade out of this lemon. And some of the biggest companies were founded out of the last depression, but they started as small little companies in your garage. And so, you know, when you said there's filmmakers, I'm sure there's a lot of ad agencies, then get national. Don't use the car, you know, industry as your only ad, you know, get national. They have to, or go international. So I think a lot of people have to reframe how they're doing their business. And those who are not in business, what are you doing? What could you do to create some different money?
No, the first question will be, a lot of people would say to you, and I know that you advise, like, Dr. Phil, people on Dr. Phil's show, yeah, and all these big important shows, but the first thing that they might say is, how can I start my own business? Doesn't that take cash to start the business I've just lost my job?
Nope, doesn't cost any money. I started Live Out Loud with nothing. It was me, a little flyer that explained how I was going to coach people, and an order form. So, no, it doesn't cost money to get started. But you have to decide. And because people are in paralysis, I mean, I would think the biggest, like, thing tomorrow that the problem is, you know, it's tough when you're stuck to then, on the other side, say, okay, turn around, let's get creative. Right?
It's
devastating to some of these families. And some of them, you know, you've seen them, they've got generational history with these companies. So it's tough to do it, but I'll tell you, this is where those who decide to do it will, you know, capture the greatest wealth in the country. And real estate's on sale, and, you know, even then people say, well, you got to have, you know, a lot of cash to buy. No, you don't. You don't have to have a lot of cash to buy garage sale price real estate. And that's where the wealth transfer is going to happen. It's going to happen in Buying Back America.
So are you telling me that, and these folks, that the key is try to get your head right. Try and push aside, compartmentalize, if you will.
Compartmentalize is the word I use. Yep.
Okay.
Compartmentalize that, yes, you have this big, hairy thing going over here, and you've got to get creative in those same moments. So it's about, you know, the other word I use is self-management. It's right. Managing what it is you really want. Get clear in the chaos. Because those who do the fastest are going to make the most money, because the opportunities are everywhere. But you got to, you know.
And once you kind of get to that place, isn't it strange how the opportunities, the connections get made? All of a sudden you start thinking one way, and the right person calls you, and things start to become, you know, the dots get connected in a strange way, you know.
I remember, you know, years and years ago, before I didn't understand the dots getting connected either, Mark Victor Hansen and I, who wrote, you know, the Chicken Soup series, he and I were walking. We were actually in Michigan. We were walking through the lobby of a hotel. We had both, I was just starting to speak and just starting to go, you know, come out. And he said, Laurel, there are more opportunities that come to me in a day than I can do in a lifetime. And I remember seriously thinking, well, where the hell are they? I mean, like, I couldn't see I could only see was the ground. So I've been there. You know, I grew up in a farm in Nebraska with, you know, not a lot of dots to connect, and thinking, you know, how do I get from here to there? And I'll tell you, the one thing is, you know, to listen to shows like yours, get connected more nationally outside of the local community. People are making things happen. I mean, the media says it's such a bad place. One of my mentors just told me the other day, he said, you know, don't let a Great Depression go to waste. He said the greatest transfer of wealth is going to happen this time. And it always does.
Yeah. Just, you know, get yourself in a good place and think about it, and then connect with others who can help you. That's the other thing that I always say is, you know, think of who you know. You probably know someone that can help get you to the right person so that you can build on something. You just haven't made that connection. You haven't thought about it. Right?
Yep.
Now, so people could know, you've got so many books, Laurel. The Millionaire Maker, The Millionaire Maker's Guide to Wealth Cycle Investing and The Millionaire Maker's Guide to Creating a Cash Machine for Life. You have Live Out Loud seminars all over the country. What is your, I can't even tell what your current work is from your bio. What's the book, are you touring the country, or what are you doing?
I have three New York Times bestsellers. I did an e-book this year called Get Off Your Lazy Assets, which is about getting your head straight and get your assets straight in your head, and you have a lot of skills, and anybody can do this. If I can do it, you can do it. And then I have a fifth book that actually was just submitted about a month ago to HarperCollins, coming out in September, called Put More Cash in Your Pocket. So we are out across the country. We'll be in Chicago August, September, October for a three-month series of teaching people how to make money. You know, I do this three-day workshop called the Cash Machine Workshop, and everybody, 100% of the rooms, have made money in 3 days. In fact, I just did it in 48 hours. I did it in Salt Lake City. Like, I just, I mean.
And you don't, what's your degree in? What, you didn't go to MIT, no, Harvard, finance. Wharton Business School?
Oh, God, no. I went to some, you know, private little Nebraska school. But, no, I got a little Division III college in Nebraska, and I got a finance business degree. A master's in exercise physiology and human behavior, and that's the part that I can just see people and their what they're supposed to be doing, and we can talk for a little bit, and I help you figure it out, and then I tell you to go ask for the money. And you know, a lot of women say, "Oh, but I'm not worthy and don't deserve it." I'll say, "Just get to it. Let's go. We're gonna ask some money right now."
Find worthiness, honey, darling. I'm on that track with you, Laura Langmire. LiveOutLoud.com is your website. You're doing some good things. You need to come to Detroit, girl. Dr. Phyllis.
We need to have a little revival camp of money making.
All right. Well, we appreciate you sharing some time with us.
Hey,
I know you're a busy
great
person. We'll visit your website, and maybe you will make time with Dr. Phil to come, Laurel Langmire. LiveOutLoud.com is the name of her website. And when we come back, I'm going to talk a little bit more on my theory on what's happening here, the bigger picture, because everyone's got to do what they got to do in tough times like this, including the President of the United States. I think he is doing what they need to do. 866-991-9927, the number to the Nancy Skinner Show. Here we go. I'm the Nancy Skinner Show. I'm Nancy Skinner. 866-991-9927. Our toll-free number. For the time being, we have a new one. Can't wait to reveal that to you. My website, nancyskinnerlive.com. Don't forget to look for me on The O'Reilly Factor tonight at 8:20. Back on TV. I did 6 CNN last night, so you should be happy with me. But here we are, doing a lot of everything. We're just working hard, as everybody is today. So, you know, one of the things I want to touch on here with this whole auto thing that I haven't yet. I heard Mahoney Bunny on the way in, Rush Limbaugh, talking about, you know, he's all over the place, essentially saying that the auto company's got a completely different deal than the Wall Street, in a way, the double standard. But yet, what he's really most upset about is that this auto task force is taking such a hands-on role in the restructure of this auto industry that it is your personal freedoms that are under attack. Your freedom to drive whatever large vehicle you want. And so they're going back to that whole an assault on personal freedom argument, which is one, right, there are two main points, folks, when we talk about this that you got to think about. One, you know, the industry is going to the government saying, help, SOS, we need your funding to survive, okay? So when you go hat in hand to the taxpayer, that gives the taxpayer the ability to say, okay, this is what we need. Now, two, this president has a responsibility, as he's been talking about, he campaigned about, we in the environmental community have been talking about for the last 20 years, that it's the auto industry is critical to our national security, to the climate, to these other objectives. It is not completely divorced from this, you know, it's just like free market, whatever the consumer wants, because the impact on the global environs are enormous. And if our automakers can make these cars in different countries, and they have these this mix of diesel cars and more fuel-efficient cars, because those are the cultures that have grown up, and we know that they have the ability to make them here. And I know personally that they have the technology in the pipeline that's going to blow everything away with the not only the Chevy Volt, but different technologies that the public has not known about. But they haven't really, they really haven't lit a fire under that. Those are like the ugly stepchildren to make people happy, you know, to make the government happy, because they've been making their profit margins on these big vehicles. And there's no reason to say that you can't have a large vehicle, heavy, sturdy duty vehicle, once we get to the technology of the future, because it's just about how you're powering it. When you hear these arguments, you got to put all this in perspective. The reason they got to this is lack of vision. Somebody at the top, and that's why I'm not upset that Rick Wagner went, did not say, look, folks, we're going to have this crisis with oil eventually. We had refineries. The number of refineries got cut in half over the last decade or so, since the 80s, in half on purpose by the oil companies. And we know with climate change that they're going to be further affected. We knew that the situation with peak oil was happening. So there wasn't the vision at the companies to say, look, we have to really ramp up the production of high technology. And it's when we say, you know, green technology, we're talking about the stuff that's being developed here goes well beyond even automotive. Because it's basic research. We got all these universities, Ann Arbor, Michigan State, Tech Town, Spark in Ann Arbor, and all we have people from all over the world that live in this region who advance manufacturing technologies because of the automotive. But there's all kinds of offshoots for different industries that happen as a result of this. So essentially, forget about this whole argument that all of a sudden the government's going to take over and run the company. But what they are going to do is say, look it, what do you got? What are you working on in terms of this technology and that technology? How can we help you move this to market, move this to economies of scale more quickly and incentivize it so that you have mass markets and we can start to get you on the course of viability for the long run? That's what it's about. And the private market has not done it on their own. So it's going to require some intervention. That's the way it is. If they would have done it on their own, then they would not be in the position they are. It's not solely because of the credit markets, my friends. Yes, it's a portion of it, but it's not solely because of that. So when you go to the government and you say we need help, that is the time that the government has to say, okay, well, we need your help to improve our national security and to help protect the climate. So what do you got? Give me your best technology and let's partner and let's make it happen. And that, my friends, is the rest of the story. Okay, coming up next hour, I got a couple of experts who have been following the details since this announcement happened who will give you a little more reaction from how everyone else, the UAW, dealers, everyone else, the foreign companies, everyone, how they're reacting to it, time frames, can it be done, stuff you're only going to hear because you're listening to a show based in Detroit. All coming up next on the Nancy Skin Show. I am Nancy Skinner, 866-991-9927, the number of the program. The day after the big bombshell about the auto plan, a lot of people trying to figure out exactly what it means. I think a lot of the auto companies are trying to figure out exactly what it means and if they will be able to make these timelines and what needs to be done to make it happen. Still talking a little bit about the press conference by Fritz Henderson, the new CEO of GM today, and he seemed pretty optimistic. So let's talk to somebody who's been following the auto industry for a very, very long time. Peter DiLorenzo is the founder and publisher of AutoExtremist.com, a great website, by the way, which I frequent often, and author of The United States of Toyota. And Peter joins me now. Hi, Peter. Thanks for being on the show.
Hey, Nancy. Glad to be here.
So tell me honestly, when you heard President Obama yesterday sort of lay out the plan, were you confused? It seemed to me like there were lots of different messages going on. Or did you know exactly what message he was sending and to whom?
Well, there were a lot of different messages. He was trying to cover a lot of bases. He was trying to, you know, speak to his labor union constituency. He was trying to sort of give the American automobile industry a boost while, you know, lecturing them on how bad they were. You know, he sacked Rick Wagner. he laid out a plan that would, you know, he and his advisor's mind, get the American auto industry on track. So it was mixed messages for sure. Some of it was optimistic, some of it was, you know, pessimistic, some of it was his lecturing style, and the other was a major hand slap or worse to the auto companies.
Now, let's digest all what you just said there. Let's start with the hand slapping. Was that, I think a lot of the talk about bankruptcy, some sort of prepackaged bankruptcy and helping workers in the wake of what would be a disaster on the order of a Katrina here? Because, you know, we've already been... Where do you live, Peter?
In the Detroit area.
Oh, you are. Okay, great. So you already know. We've been here 8 years in recession.
Yes. Exactly.
It's ugly. So, you know, to me it sounds like the bondholders have been the big holdouts in all this. Ironically, because I would just guess that a lot of the bondholders who have been the last ones to really step up to the plate with concessions are the same folks who are involved in the whole Wall Street financial mess, because they are you know, the purchasers and holders of bonds.
Yeah.
And they have been unwilling to take their haircut, as we've heard so many times. So I think he was saying to them, you know, that they just felt like that Obama was going to bail out this industry no matter what, so why should they? They could get the same sweet deal that AIG got. And I think he was saying, uh-uh, not so fast.
Yeah, exactly. He was telegraphing the fact that, you know, we're not fooling around, and it was aimed right at the bondholders, that we will go to a quick rinse bankruptcy with GM, and that they are going to have to play ball and quit messing around and dragging their feet, because if they don't, they're liable to get not much of anything. So, yes, that was exactly what he was doing. But I actually think he was giving that same message, which they gave to GM and Chrysler privately, that, you know, if you don't get it together in 60 days for GM and 30 for Chrysler, that, you know, we have no problems at all going to a quick rinse bankruptcy.
Now, we'll just Fritz mentioned that. What is a quick rinse? we're getting a really high speed education on some of these terms. What's a quick rinse bankruptcy?
Well, I don't pretend to be a financial expert, but from what I understand, rather than dragging out a long bankruptcy which can go on in court for, as we know, years, apparently, things are put into motion, and all players are brought to the table, and it happens quickly, like they say, within, you know, a month. So that's
so it's binding arbitration. A judge sits down, everybody submits what their best offer is, and essentially a judge says, you're going to do this, you're going to do that, and you're going to do that.
Well, yeah, basically, but in this case, the government is right there saying, okay, this is what we have to get done, and let's do it right now. And you know, Fritz Henderson mentioned that this morning, and that's the difference. Rather than be in court for a year or two or three, it would be done in a month or 6 weeks.
Yeah, he also said he'd much prefer to do it outside of bankruptcy than inside bankruptcy. And so the press conference today was about financing. Peter, now I got to say this. They talked about this program that they're going to offer. If you lose your job, they'll cover your payments for 9 months. I think Hyundai did this and it's successful. You know, one of my problems with, and I am definitely a, you know, pro-industry person. I've been out there as an advocate saying how systemic this industry is. People have no idea if they go down, what kind of other entities go down with them, including newspapers, radio stations, everyone who depends on the advertising, a lot of advertising. But I'm, you know, a lot of it was when you focus so much on just the money aspect of the car and the deals of the car and, you know, such a deal, I'm wondering where or who is thinking about the goodwill aspects, you know, just reaching out saying thank you. And you know what? We are a new company, and we are, you know, just sort of that sense of talking to the American people past all the employee discount, better, come now. You know what I mean? Which just, I think, goes right over the head of people when they, unless they immediately have to have a car, but a lot of people aren't really, you know, how much, what's that segment of the population that has to go buy a new car and has to choose right now?
Yes, unfortunately, the American car companies and their products have been reduced to commodities, and people are really not aware of how many excellent products they're making. And actually, one thing about the president's speech was, I was sitting there thinking, here's the president of the United States talking about, you know, Buicks and I thought, well, maybe we need a car salesman in chief. Maybe the president and Michelle Obama should do an hour-long infomercial for the American car companies just to get people aware that, you know, there are some really excellent products here. Forget about the deals. Forget about the financing and all the other things like you mentioned. And talk about how great these products are because, you know, certainly there's a perception gap out there between what people believe about American cars and what they actually deliver. So something has to be done to close that gap, and I've already called that the biggest marketing challenge of the last century and going into this century, because it is a huge task.
Yeah, it is, but I think it's, and I agree with you, Peter, completely. My guest is Peter DiLorenzo, founder and publisher of AutoExtremist.com. You have a great blog, so everybody can comment on this thing. But it's beyond just look how great our products are. I think there has to be a messaging campaign out there that says to the American, unlike the banks, frankly, which have said basically, you are SOL, you know, screw you.
Yeah.
That the auto industry, there has been a different treatment of the auto industry, for sure, absolutely.
Yeah.
You know, from the beginning, with this whole requirements for the viability plan and whatnot that didn't exist on Wall Street. But just something that says, you know, a campaign that speaks to the emotional and patriotic aspects of what we're going through, you know? That's a whole different kind of messaging campaign. It's almost like a political campaign. It's not a, hey, did you know the Ford Fusion gets 41 miles per gallon? It's the best, you know what I mean? That's
yeah.
The kind of thing that they're, even today in the press conference, you had these guys and, you know, who is it, Fritz Henderson, and then who was the person that was actually talking about the deal?
Oh, that's Mark Lynette.
Mark Lynette?
Mark LaNave.
LaNave.
Yeah.
Well, you know, with the pinstripe suit and such, it just looked like fast, slick auto guys, you know?
Yeah.
And I think that they really need to get more creative about their messaging. Speak to women decide cars more than men decide cars. You know that.
Oh, well, I think women influence 90% of the purchases of automobiles.
Right. So what those guys did today was not something that really would have captured the attention or the hearts of women. And I, maybe they don't have women in their marketing and communications department who are, if they don't, they need them.
Well, they do. But, you know, I probably would have, if I was advising Fritz, I would have not had that media conference today. I would have said, you know what, let's wait a day or two and think about it, and then talk about it. But instead, it was right back in it this morning with the press corps, and, you know, I think a lot of things got lost. The main point was we're going to make it, you know, and we're going to meet the administration's goals, but it was almost too soon. I wanted to digest what's happened, think about what the president said Monday, and maybe come back on Friday instead of Tuesday with a media conference, and maybe they would have done better.
Okay. Hey, when we come back, Peter DiLorenzo, my guest, AutoExtremist.com, we're going to talk about this timeline, 30 days, 60 days, what needs to be done, can it be done? There are so many questions here. And is the Obama administration picking and choosing winners among the auto industry? And is that a good thing? I was on CNN last night duking it out with Nolan Finley, our local Detroit News editor, saying that it was unfair that Rick Wagner got fired. I'm like, time for a new team. So we'll get Peter's view on that when we come back. So the number to call. Well, seems like a short timeline, 30 days for Chrysler, 60 days for GM. When you're living in Detroit, that's a very short timeline to be the polar bear on our little glacier melting away. It is the Nancy Skinner Show. I'm Nancy Skinner, 866-991-9927. My discussion with Peter DiLorenzo continues. He is the founder and publisher of AutoExtremist.com and author of The United States of Toyota. Before we get into the competition and the longer-term horizon prospects here, Peter, I was on CNN last night debating Nolan Finley, who you know if you're from Detroit is the editor of the Detroit News. And the topic was Rick Wagner, that he said that this was just all politics, that he was a sacrificial lamb, that the Wall Street CEOs did not have to go through this. I contend, you know what? I'm sorry, Rick Wagner, he's a career guy there. He's been a CEO, for 8 years or something now? That there was a lack of vision throughout, and throughout this time frame where they were making money hand over fist with the SUVs, and there just wasn't the vision that said, look, we're gonna hit the wall at some point with oil prices. I could see that coming as a talk radio host. You know, I'm talking about it from the climate perspective and from a political perspective, that there would be this political storm and that there would be a demand for advanced technology. And so the fact that he kind of meandered through, I know they tried to talk to President Bush, which no one ever talks about. President Bush would not meet with the big three automakers. I think it finally took a year, and they met with him. What do you think about that? I mean, do you think that he was doing a really fantastic job and poor Rick Wagner, he was thrown out? Or if you're going to fundamentally reinvent this industry, you needed to get some new leadership in there?
Well, I think Rick actually did some very good things when he was at GM. He positioned them for the Asian markets really quite expertly. GM was highly successful there. But, you know, he did make some mistakes, too. Would I would have preferred that the White House didn't have to, you know, fire a CEO? Yeah, I would have preferred that to happen differently. But I could see that, the president needed a body. You know, he needed something. And, they laid it out to Rick Wagner last week and said, we need you to step down. And
well, I just disagree that they needed a body, because I think that President Obama, when he was a candidate, came to the Detroit Economic Council. When was that? I mean, this is mid-campaign. And he said, look, you guys got to do better. There is not enough urgency to start to produce these fuel-efficient vehicles. And the storm is coming. And everyone widely here in Detroit, they went nuts. It was just like and I called Nolan an apologist last night on the air, but he was among the biggest. But there's almost a mentality that everybody in Detroit, you don't know the auto industry, and you can't push this thing, and you know what? But as a commander-in-chief, looking at the climate and the national security, yeah, I think he thinks that these guys aren't capable of really turning this around, and he's saying, look, our team's going to help you, and we don't want to keep this as a war to the state, but you've proved that you were not capable on your own of doing it.
Yeah, well, let's not forget that the president came back to Detroit several times and, went to the plants and said, I'm with you. And there was a decided shift after that speech at the Detroit Economic Club, because I think his advisors got together with him and said, let's be a little careful here, Chief, because, you need these people's votes. But beyond that, I think one thing that the Washington Auto Task Force found out when they deep dived into Detroit and the domestic automobile industry is how much research and development they've actually done. And it's a lot more than they even realize. Now, if the president wants to, you know, jumpstart us into this shiny, happy, green future, that's great. But it's going to take some time, a lot more than people realize. And the fact of the matter is they have to get this technology to the point where it's affordable for the masses. And right now, we have a few hybrid vehicles, and the big breakthroughs that they're talking about are down the road. But
what it sounds like to me, though, is the president's willing to say, hey, listen, if you partner with us to make that happen, if you commit to it, we'll be there for you.
Well, yeah, and I hope it works that way. I really do.
Yeah.
Because I think there's tremendous talent at these car companies. They've done some already quite staggering things.
Absolutely, that the American people does not know about. And I've been talking about it, and I'm on TV. I'm going to continue to talk about it.
Yeah.
I believe in it, and I believe in their future. But I am out of time for this segment. Your website is most informative and helpful. Peter DiLorenzo, founder and publisher of Auto Extremist and author of The United States of Toyota. Thanks so much, Peter, for being with me today.
Thanks, Nancy.
Appreciate it.
Take care.
Okay. Coming up, we're going to hear from the UAW's perspective, because we haven't heard a whole lot about the UAW, lots of different aspects, right here on the Nancy Skinner Show.
Nothing you can say when the coffee's done. Nothing you can say, but you can learn how to play the game. Nothing you can make that can't be made. No one you can save that can't be saved.
And there's more to this than just how the companies feel about this. There's lots of reactions all across across America, actually. It is the Nancy Skinner Show. I'm Nancy Skinner, 866-991-9927. We've been focusing a lot on the statements of Fritz Henderson, President Obama, the Auto Task Force, average people. But, you know, the UAW dealers, so many people are affected by the Obama team's announcement yesterday of giving a Chrysler a 30-day lifeline and a General Motors 60 days in terms of some financing, some help, some hands-on help from the task force to fundamentally restructure this industry. So let's try and see how everyone else is reacting to this, all of this news, and taking it in. Barbara Whelan has been working on this story for the Lansing State Journal. She's the auto beat reporter there. And has been covering the UAW and dealer reactions to all of this. So first of all, Barbara, thanks for being on the show.
Thank you.
Now, the UAW, they've been making concessions for a long time now. Mm-hmm. So they probably feel pretty beat up because essentially the plans were rejected, not enough. And
right.
They don't feel like it was their, they think it's the bondholders. Is that correct?
That's certainly what I'm hearing. And I've heard from some UAW folks that they're a bit frustrated. They've agreed in 2007 to institute a 50% pay cut for new workers, and some of them have challenged people to say, you know, point to other companies that have made that deep of a concession. So there's quite a bit of anger out there.
So Ron Gettelfinger's not speaking to anyone, doing any media reports today. Why is that? Are they trying to figure out what their reaction should be? Is he mad? I mean, usually Ron's pretty available to the media.
Well, they are also in negotiations with GM at this time. They are negotiating terms of the VEBA, which is the healthcare trust fund for retirees. Typically, when the UAW is in negotiation, they are pretty quiet, so that doesn't surprise me too much.
Okay, so the VEBA. So they made some concessions. Right? For people who don't get all this stuff, essentially the auto companies used to take care of their healthcare, made payments, and then was it last year or was it 2007 that they decided that they would actually take care of their own health care, that there would be payments made, but they would essentially manage their own health care. They call it VEBA. And what's wrong with it? What's wrong with that? What other concessions can they give? Are they talking about reducing the benefits to retirees?
Well, right. The VEBA did come out of the 2007 agreement, and that does require a big pool of money in the billions of dollars to come from GM to help fund that, to get that started. Of course, GM, as you know, is not in a position to be throwing around billions of dollars at this point, so the question is, where is that money going to come from? And there has been some pressure on the government for the union to accept payment in the form of stocks rather than cash, and the UAW has said that they agree to that. But it's not just the automaker and the union that are involved. It's also the bondholders that have a say here. And from what I understand, that is what is holding things up at this point.
Yeah, I want to get to that in a second. But so what they would have to do is they would have to take existing contracts for health care and pension benefits and reduce them. The thing that was so sacrosanct among those contracts at AIG, retention bonuses.
Mm-hmm.
But they're going to take these same contracts and deals of auto workers who are now retired, so they can't, you're not young whippersnappers on Wall Street, they can't go back to work at another firm. They're just going to take less in terms of their pension and health care, right?
That's what the big fear is, and I did talk to two people yesterday who are retiring today from the factories here in Lansing, and they are scared because they don't know what the future will bring for them in terms of their pension, in terms of their health care. They have, you know, agreed to retirement with a set of expectations, but with things being the way they are now, there's no guarantee that that's going to come to pass.
Yeah, it might be that and a side gig at Dunkin' Donuts, right?
Who knows, if you can find a job there.
Right, great. All right, so you mentioned the bondholders. I just talked about that. What I'm hearing from my inside sources is that a lot of that bankruptcy talk was to scare the bondholders into stepping up to the table, because the bondholders think, hey, Wall Street got bailouts. Why should we give anything? They're going to come bail out the companies. And so the president's team basically said, I wouldn't make that bet. You better come to the table and take the same haircut everyone else is taking. Is that what you're understanding?
It really is. It sounds like there has been, it sounds like they're at loggerheads and nobody's willing to give here. And the government, it seems like, has taken a couple steps to try and get things moving again. One is the announcement yesterday. Another is getting rid of Wagner, which, you know, they replaced him with the number two guy at GM. So he was the only one to go. And a lot of people said, look, this is a symbolic move. And I can see an argument for that, especially if the message was, start moving or we're going to, more heads will roll. So what I see is the Obama administration.
I'm for it. I debated Nolan Finley on CNN last night.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, you know what? I don't know Fritz Henderson, but I do know this. I know that if you want to fundamentally restructure the industry, that you can't have the same captain. You know, like a football
mm-hmm.
team, okay? When a football team continues to lose games, you get in it, you promote the second guy or you get someone new, you know? So it makes sense to me that,
mm-hmm.
that they did that. But anyways, the bondholders seem to be the troublemakers in all this. Who are these people, Barbara? Are they, they're Wall Street guys, aren't they?
Pretty much, yes. Yes, they are the people with the deep pockets, the institutions with the deep pockets, who hold the debt for GM and they stand to lose a lot of money if GM files for bankruptcy and a judge gets in there and tells the bondholders you're not going to get anything or you're going to get pennies on a dollar for what you were expecting. So there's some incentive for the bondholders to move and try and get a better deal than they might get out of a bankruptcy court.
And this clean rinse talk means, hey, we're going to go in really quick and we are just going to nail you.
Right.
I like to cut through a lot of the legalese. So we get them to the table. This is how it's kind of coming out. The warranty was intended to say, okay, we're not really going to liquidate these companies. We are going to go in there and we're going to hit the bondholders and reduce their debt so that the balance sheets are restored. We're going to have these warranties in place for the cars so that people continue to buy them, plus an incentive program.
Mm-hmm.
What did you think today of the press conference with Fritz Henderson and his team on the new financing and the new, what do you call it?
The
guarantee program, yes.
Right. And I didn't actually hear that press conference because I have been out talking to dealers, and I'm getting, they're for it. I mean, anything that helps, they are for. But honestly, for example, a Buick dealer told me that he wasn't sure that many of his buyers would benefit from this because Buick owners tend to be older and retired already, so being laid off isn't so much a concern for them. I was told more so a Chevrolet dealer or perhaps even somebody who buys Pontiacs, they might be more affected by this program. But they are not going to turn down anything that might help, of course, so they're positive on it. And actually what I'm interested to find out, and I don't know an answer for this yet, is how will taxpayers feel about this? Because they're the ones giving the billions of dollars to these companies. Do they want that to go to help pay the car bills of people who lose their jobs? I don't know.
So how about the cash for clunkers? It seems to me that the dealers would really much prefer that because that's new business. They're getting new cars. People are turning in their less fuel-efficient cars for more fuel-efficient. I suppose it depends on if you're a Hummer dealer or if you have a Ford Fusion, you know, a lot of Ford Fusions to sell.
Right.
Right?
I think Hummer dealers have bigger worries on their plate at this point. There's going to be a Hummer brand after a few weeks from now, who knows?
Right. Are they trying to sell them, and who would want to buy Hummer at this point?
Well, that's exactly it. Nobody knows. I haven't heard of any group coming forward or any company coming forward saying that they're interested in buying Hummer. So
Arnold Schwarzenegger, maybe. Because, you know, do you know he was responsible for the Hummer?
I didn't know that.
It was he went and got like a military vehicle, and he made it renovated it and made it street adaptable because he thought it was so cool. Came here to Detroit, talked to the executives, and they turned it into Hummer. All little useless trivia. How about a Saturn? Now Saturn, those cars are pretty fuel efficient, but yet they're still talking about shedding Saturn as well.
Saturn is an interesting question out there, and I did talk to a Saturn dealer yesterday. She is very hopeful that there will be an agreement to spin off Saturn as a standalone brand. And how that would work is Saturn would contract out the manufacture of vehicles to other companies, and Saturn would basically be a distribution company. She is saying that there should be some news on that hopefully coming out in April. Not a final decision necessarily, but some update on the progress of those talks.
Mm-hmm. And so what have the dealers given Barbara? My guest is Barbara Whelan. She's an Autobeat reporter at the Lansing State Journal. What have the dealers, who are very powerful politically, what have they given in this whole situation? Because a part of the problem is too many brands. GM has like 55 brands, Ford, you know, less than that. But it's just too many brands, too many models in a competitive global environment. And it's costly to reduce them, and the dealers have been fighting the auto companies against that. Is that what they've had to give in on?
Well, at this point, they are giving by buying a lot of inventory that they can't necessarily sell at this point. The way it works is a dealer pays an automaker up front when they take delivery of a car, but the dealer only receives money when somebody buys the car off of them. So all the time that car is sitting on the lot, they are paying for it. They're not making money on it. So they're feeling the hurt that way right now. Now, in the future, for example, if Saturn goes under, if Hummer goes under, there are franchise agreements in place for these dealers that protect them. If the brands go under, then there will have to be some kind of settlement. The question is, how much can that possibly be at this point, because GM doesn't have a lot of money to throw around. So that is where dealers could become hurt in the future.
All right. When we come back, Barbara Whelan, Lansing State Journal, I just have a couple more questions about the timing, because it seems to me that the things are kind of moving in the right direction, but there is a tick, tick, tick situation going on. And that, I'm not sure, that seems to me like the largest problem here. And I'm up against a break here, but I'll if you don't mind, I'll give you a quick question on how all this is going to work, the timing is going to work with the bankruptcy and the go-forward and the viability. Barbara Whelan is my guest, Autobeat reporter, Lansing State Journal, 866-991-9927. Things are tight. Time marches on for Port Detroit. Talking about all that stuff right here on the Nancy Skinner Show.
We sail off to the sun till we found the sea of green, and we live beneath the waves in our yellow submarine. We all live in a yellow submarine, yellow submarine.
All right, and let's continue with the big news today about the Guarantee and Protection Plan. So we can get some cars being sold here on the Nancy Skinner Show. I'm Nancy Skinner, 866-991-9927. Barbara Whelan is my guest. She's with the Lansing State Journal. She's working on a story tomorrow that kind of details what the reaction. GM made their big announcement today. We're just getting some word, Barbara, that Ford is going to do the same thing to cover your car payments. If you become unemployed, you lose your job. What? Right, one, they're modeling this after Hyundai. It's working, right? Is that where this came from?
It seems to be. If I recall, last month Hyundai did okay with sales, certainly better than a lot of the other makers.
And so now Ford is joining GM, saying they'll cover payments up to $700 each month for a year.
That's a lot of vehicle.
Wow.
Yeah.
On any new Ford, Lincoln, or Mercury, that's Ford's, I guess on all of their models, right?
Mm-hmm.
They're doing this. But you have to be, I heard Fritz Henderson, what, you have to have made three payments and then you'll get up to nine more?
That's my understanding too, correct.
Now who is this going to appeal to? How do you think the average person is going to, you know, is this someone who, maybe they have a really, their car is at the end of its life, and maybe they are a little worried about their job, and you better go buy now because you're going to get a freebie for a while. And how does that work if they're not getting the cash flow?
Well, that, you know, another good question, because, you know, you have to think that some of that money is coming from the taxpayers in the form of those government loans. But who it will appeal to, I think you're exactly right, are people who need a new car, want a new car at this point, might be enticed by some of the tax breaks that were announced yesterday, but are also uncertain with the economy where their jobs will be, you know, 6 months, 7 months from now. They might feel a little reassured, a little bit safer in buying. At least I believe that's the hope here.
Mm-hmm. And now Ford is additionally offering 0% financing, I'm seeing. So if you ever needed a car, this is the time to get one, right?
They're doing a lot to try and get people to come and buy, yes.
And it's effective immediately?
I believe so.
Uh-huh. And so what else, what other things are they going to do that we should be looking for in with this? As I said, the time frame is what's so important. Let's wait first before we get to the other two. Chrysler. Chrysler's situation now is 30 days. They basically say, listen, you gotta go find someone to take care of you because we don't feel like we want to invest any more money in your brand.
Yeah, that's pretty much it. The situation for Chrysler is a lot darker. The government's not seeing much of a future for them unless they can get another company such as Fiat to take them over.
Have you talked to anyone out in Auburn Hills? What's the mood there at headquarters at Chrysler?
No, I really haven't. I'm really focused on GM here since we do have two GM factories. That is my main scope. I just hear about Chrysler, but I don't talk to too many folks over there.
Yeah, that's in my district. So they're world headquarters. And I think for people around the country, they don't realize that you look around and you see so many American cars and you know how many businesses are reliant on this industry. And the idea of them just collapsing is it's like a nightmare scenario is the way to think about it. Because
yeah, it is. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, we feel that here, too.
Yeah, yeah, I know, Lansing's. I had Virg Bonero on, your mayor, yesterday.
Yes.
He's such a quiet, understated guy.
Very mild-mannered, yes.
Yeah, he is. So you think the timing is something that this is it? This is why they rolled it out today? They didn't even wait a day. This is it. Fritz Henderson is go, go, go. We're going to do this. We're going to get out there and give it every last push and see what happens.
I believe so. I don't think you make a decision like this overnight, so they must have been thinking about it for a while. Obviously, it came, I don't think it's a coincidence that it came after yesterday's announcement, no.
Yeah.
And, you know, they're doing everything they can to try and get more people to buy, to improve their situation. I hope this works for them.
Yeah, and I think Congress will be doing more. Let's hope so. Barbara Whelan with the Lansing Street Journal. Thanks so much for your great Lansing State Journal. I'm sorry. Thanks for
Thank
your
you.
Great reporting. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Okay, Barbara. All right, you have a good day.
You too.
All right, so folks, I mean, that's it. A lot of reactions sort of from Detroit about this. There is a sense of optimism that at least we got a lifeline. I talked about on CNN last night, tough love, and I said that yeah, it's tough. They fired Rick Wagner, although he gets a $20 million severance. But there was at least the love part. There was the love line, the lifeline that says, look, if you fundamentally restructure, and I guess there's a web link on my website, NancySkinnerLive.com, to my op-ed last November that said the same thing. Just take this industry, all this great technology that exists, and figure out how to fast-track it, retool it, and get these vehicles going. And in the meanwhile, provide incredible incentives so people start to ride American cars again and realize they're great cars. I have a Chrysler Sebring convertible. I love it. It's an awesome car. top down, spring is coming. Think about it. And you know, because you're our whole economy depends on it. And don't forget, here we go again. I'll be on Bill O'Reilly tonight, 8:20, I believe, is my hit time on the O'Reilly Factor. So tune in. We'll be talking G20 and some other things, not the auto industry, but doing my best to get out there and fight the good fight. How's that? So tune your TV over to Bill O'Reilly for just a few minutes, and then you could I'll read for you because it's so funny. Oh, when I'll share my responses I get from my viewers. I'm going to do a special love letter segment. The Fox News viewers who love me so dearly when I get on there, they have such kind words for me. It just makes me feel so good. So I'll be doing that, and you'll be watching me, and then we'll come back and talk about it. How's that? All right, deal. And we'll do all of that on the Nancy Skinner Show. Have a great night.